into Yesodas Tagara. So I just want to go back and make a brief ara about Minhag HaMedina. We saw a very narrow application of Minhag HaMedina in our Sugya. Sugya and Ayin Vav, that you, in a ambiguous contract, you resolve it according to Minhag HaMedina. We saw a more robust application on Pei Zayin, Pei Gimel. Remember the discussion over there? Socher Poalim Stam, follow the Minhag HaMedina in terms of the times, the meal provisions, etc., etc. We saw some post-game say, oh, you know, what's considered too much labor? That's could be determined by Minhag HaMedina. So fill in the content by Minhag HaMedina. That's the general theme that we've seen until now. About 2 years ago, we went into the Situmta Sugya, an Ayin Hay, to show what? Yair, what did it show? At least what did I think it showed?
It showed that kinyanim, that minhag can be used to construct new forms of kinyanim.
That's
content,
right. That's good. And then we saw, actually, we didn't see this, but I mentioned it. I'll just actually point you to it right now. So the Gemara there says that Situmta could create kinyanim where otherwise the halacha doesn't have kinyanim, right? So that seems to suggest that that minhag is very powerful. The Rashba there had a very broad formulation, you recall. The Rashba in that sugya said, based off the Yerushalmi, minhag bat halacha, shekol davar shev mamon al pi haminhag konin umaknin. Right? So just when it comes to Choshen Mishpat, just always be guided by Minhag HaMedina, because it sounds almost like that's constitutive of what Choshen Mishpat is, right? It's just the minhag is what's really dominant, and maybe the halacha gives you some default minhagim, but always follow the minhag. There's an important chuva over Moshe that I want to add. I'll add to this discussion later. Should have added it for today. The Mordechai comment to Mordechai and Shabbos, Saisak and Marba Mitzia. Do you remember what the Mordechai says?
Mordechai wrote 2 days about a minhag kinyan for Dover Shalom.
Yes. Yeah. Could kinyan situmta prevail over Dover Shalom Baliola? Correct? And he said that, well, you know, if it's a minhag b'nei adam, shendojim b'neihem zelazem, the kaimen, gam kan sarach l'kayim. If the minhag is to treat this kind of neder, davar shlomo yolam, as binding, then you got to treat it as binding. And he quoted Rabbi Chiel, who disagreed. Right? He thought that you can't compare situmta, which just extends what constitutes a halachic kinyan, to generating kinyanim on things that are not really transactable. So Rabbi Chiel said, de'im hu masnei ba'odim uberes ein klum, to have a davar shlomo yolam. Dilo damya l'situmta. It's not comparable to situmta. Why is it not comparable to situmta? Yeah,
Yair? Because situmta affects what form a kinyan can have, but not what a kinyan can have.
That's right. So situmta is not going to help you for a davar shalo yoil bo kinyan. It just helps you in defining what is a kinyan. Right? So he thinks that you can't extend the paradigm of situmta to kinyanim on a davar shalo bo yoil. And clearly the first day of the Mordechai disagrees with that. Do you think that's who do you think is right in that machlokas? Do you think that Rabbeinu Yechiel is right to say there's a distinction between the Situmta case and the Davar Shlomo Yolam case? Or do you think that Mordechai is right?
Probably depends on why we assume that Kinyan doesn't apply to the in the first place.
Okay.
I don't know that for sure.
Right.
I mean, if the kinyan requires some sort of thing to be called upon, then yeah, it would be hard to understand how any kind of mechanism generates transfer ownership. If the subject of the kinyan doesn't exist,
but let's say kinyanim do require a thing.
Yeah,
but let's say kinyanim do require a thing to be chal on. It doesn't seem so strange to say that. Well, via minhag, you could transact in things, in thingless things, right? The whole point of Minhag HaMedina is that it allows you to do things that the halakha itself doesn't allow you to do.
Maybe, but not
necessarily.
Not anything that, like, the whole point of Rishol Ba'olam is that, like, fundamentally there's something wrong with Kinyan, that the Kinyan can't be chal on an object which doesn't exist.
But per the Rashba,
in that case, like, Minhag HaMedina doesn't have something to say about it. Like, great, it's another form of doing a Kinyan, but there's no concept. Halakha doesn't relate to future things.
Well, halacha on its own doesn't relate to future things.
Yeah,
ownership on its own doesn't, but via the incorporation of minhag, then right? It could be incorporated that way.
Maybe, but that's a creation. I don't think Sitri Tumta teaches you that.
Okay. I think clearly if you lean into this Rashba view, right, so kol davar shebe mamon al pi amino konin amaknin, hilkach kol b'chol davar shenogu ha-tagar and liknos konin, I would think that's going to extend also to davar shlo bol yolam. Wouldn't you think that? No? You still think it's...
I still think it's like a very relevant question. Like, we never go on things that things aren't honorable at all.
Okay. Cole, Yakir, do you have thoughts on this? Yeah, Yakir.
No.
No thoughts?
I'm thoughtless.
Okay. Now, Piskei Tshuva in Choshen Mishnah Reish Aleph, which is where Sitri Tumta is brought down, quotes two deos along the lines of this Mordechai Machlokes. See it here, it's on 15 of the source sheet. B'tshuvas chasam sofer, choshe mishat simen samich vav, kasa b'pshitas disitumta mahani gam b'davar shalo bal yolam. He cites a tshuva of the Rashba in Klal Yud Gimel. De'im minag olam lahaknos b'shtari chachirus dvarim shalo bal yolam mahani mitam situmta. So the Rashba is very interested in all these like shit and all these tax farming agreements that he had in his, that people had in his day. So basically the idea is that I would buy out the right to collect taxes in this neighborhood and sell it to somebody else. So
this is new, right?
Well,
is this new or is this
new? I mentioned this, we can see it inside. Okay. So it's new in terms of seeing the source. I gestured towards it though.
Okay.
And so people were selling the right to collect taxes. So let's say if I own the right to collect taxes in Philly, I could sell it to Ben. Even though kind of the collection is davar shlo bal yolam, right? I'm kind of just like selling this intangible right to collect it from people. He cites the Mordechai that we just saw as precedent for this. Okay. And he says that even Rabbeinu Yechiel, who disagrees and thinks that generally it's not going to work for davar shlo bal yolam, that's only when it's mipnei shelo noagu lador lemoel terem shabah yelad la'olam. Even that Rabbeinu Yechiel that said that you can't make a binding contract with respect to davar shlo bal yolam, he thought that's just local to the discussion of the Mordechai, where it happened to be that there is no custom to engage in contracts about hiring a moel before a child is born.
If there was a question then,
it was just an empirical disagreement about like whether in fact there is a minug to transact in Moel hirings.
So just like a question of like whether
there is a minug. Yeah, he says, Umasha Kasava Mordechai Bashem Rabbeinu Yechiel, Bemisha Nadar Laechad Lasais Beno Lemoel, Lamum, Mahani Mitam Situmta, Shekein Noagu. Situmta is not going to help you when it's contrary to the minog, right? But any time that there's a genuine custom to engage in these kinds of things, even if it's davar shlo bal yolam, I think it's going to work. V'kasav od. Everyone's worried about asmachtas in halacha, right? Asmachta lokanya. He says, well, once you have a minug to write contracts on asmachta things, then of course it's going to be valid. The hataima de lokani mishim de lo samcha daite. Problem with asmachtas, you don't have gemiras das. Mikivan shenagu shakir samcha daite vikani. But once there's a genuine custom to enter into binding agreements on these contingencies, asmachtas, it's going to be binding and enforceable under the idea of Situmta. Very, very important tshuva of Nachsam Sofer. All right, Cole, did you want to say something, or was that just an echo I was getting?
No.
Okay. Remember we saw the Gemara in Kedushin Chavav? I'm just giving a very brief overview. Remember we saw the Gemara in Kedushin Chavav went in the opposite direction? The Situmta case is a case that's something that doesn't work according to Halacha, but Situmta allows it to work, right? So the Situmta, you might say, revives or gives life to something that doesn't have life by Halacha's own lights. But we also saw the opposite case, that maybe arguably the Gemara, and seems to be the simple Pshat in the Gemara in Kedushin Chavav, that even if you have something that's normally valid according to Halacha, if it's not valid according to Minhag HaMedina, that basically stops the halachic kinyan from being valid. So remember the Gemara said that according to the Din Torah, sados b'kasef yiknu, so karka is nikna b'kasef, but the Gemara said that if it's a makom, shenogu lichtov shtar, lo kana ad sheyichtov shtar. So remember that? Sound familiar to you guys? Yes? And Rashi there said, Rashi had more of a das formulation. He said, you need a shtar, kiva dirigilin bahachi lo samchadaiti dilokeach ad dinakat shtara. Right, so once the custom is to also write a deed, then the halachic kinyan is not going to be valid on its own because, notice, it affects the party's gemuras das. That seems to be Rashi's interpretation. So these are important applications of minog. It's not 100% clear to what extent they're objective, or meaning that the objective norms are decisive, halacha incorporates them, versus just the background norms bear... they encroach on the kind of das that the parties are going to have. Okay, and then we're just reconstructing their das. Yeah.
Let's say that the
Yeah.
Isn't Rashi's reading a little implausible in view of the possibility that they don't know what the minimum Medina is? Or it sounds like it sounds like the Mishnah.
Yeah.
The Gemara is not talking about the kind of considerations that go to your dot consideration.
Right. Yeah, it's possible. I think if I want to accept that comment, then I think we could just read Rashi as saying, well, the legal rule then is to treat it as if the parties didn't have smichas das because they're going against Minhag HaMedina. So it's not a subjective reconstruction of their mental states, but the point is that this is the output of the system of rules.
But that means that the... Okay, what's the cash value of that? I'm not trying to get that. What's the... I don't know what the rubber hits the road on that.
Distinction?
Yeah. No, I'm reading Rashi. I think I understand Rashi. I just think I don't understand the Gemara like Rashi.
Yeah.
Maybe Rashi's assumption is that maybe there's something called a lumping stock where, in a particular place, if you have the case where this might come up is like where there's a woman who's known by like different names in different places, and so you write a get with one name, you write a get with a name you know her by, but where she is now, that was her name in Philadelphia, but this is her name in New York, and you write with the Philadelphia name. So I think there's a discussion with Gemara whether that counts as the Shema.
Right.
It's all very sketchy. I don't think Rashi has the Shema.
Right. All right.
I'd love to ask if anybody has thoughts on this.
Anybody have thoughts on Cole's point or?
On halachic gemara stats?
No one has strong feelings, Cole. Not on this. I think it's Rashi just...
It seems like such an important point.
Yeah. It is an important point. Kind of the Rashi itself doesn't...
People's feelings are stronger.
Yeah, they should be. I agree. But I think the Rashi does kind of bring to the foreground this question again. Is Minhag just trying to give us a hechitimtzi for reconstructing the Gemiras Das? Or is Minhag the objective social practices that are incorporated normatively into halacha? Now, I'll give you a concrete nafkamina. Let me just review the last case. Remember we saw the Tshuva Rekiv Eger and Simon Gimel, that if the practice was, the custom is that you go to this arbitration panel in Venice, that's the Tshuva of the Marshah, then you go there rather than going to the Bez Din, also based on this idea of Minhag Sochrim, and he cites the Gemara about Sitimta. But I want to briefly add to this discussion today is this quite radical Shuvah of the Rashba on Chelek Vav Simon Reishna and Dalit. So it's up here on page 17 of the source sheet, the Google Docs source sheet.
Wait,
Chelik Vav, Simon, Reishin, and Dalet. But it's page 17 on the Google Docs source sheet that you have now.
The latest. Perpignan.
What
does that mean?
Southern France. It's a place and it's a city.
Okay.
All right, good. So guys, look at this really great tshuva. Shalta, Maisa Hayyabi Perpignan. Ruvain Shehesi has Bito Leah LeShimon. So Ruvain's daughter Leah marries Shimon. Okay, everyone's happy. Not only did they get married, but Vihichnis Lo Ima Sach Mamon Binadinya. She brought in a nice dowry from her father. And of course the Simcha continues. Viyol de Lobas. Quite literally, she bore him a child. So that's the good part. Now the bad part comes. Achar kach mesa Leah. Leah dies. So the wife dies. And then things go from bad to worse. V'achar zman mesa gamken habash yoldelo. Okay, so the wife dies. Then the daughter dies. V'achshav amad Reuven. So now the father of the deceased wife gets up. V'tava b'dinei hagoyim. He sues in the non-Jewish courts of Perpignan. Sheyachselo osa mamon hanadunya shehichnislo Leah bito. He wants the dowry back that he gave his daughter for the marriage. Okay. So right off the bat, you guys have feelings on what the din should be in this case?
The husband's yorish.
Well, yeah, in the Torah, the husband's yorish, right?
Right. The husband's yorish over the daughter, right? Like, ignoring what happened with the daughter, it's over the Torah.
Yeah.
So
V'yachav isha abal yorish is ishto v'aves bita b'dini Yisrael. So even though it's kind of case closed, right? Because either the daughter or the husband's going to inherit, but the daughter died anyway, so it's going to go back to the husband. And anyway, Yerusha Sabal trumps it. So there's nothing really to talk about here. Right? Under Jewish law, it's clear that the husband should inherit. But Toein Vo'omer, the father of the bride, father of the deceased wife, says, She'ein lochosh li Yerusha Sabal. You don't have to worry about that law and the Torah. Kivan she'hakol yodim she'hem hochem b'dine agoyim. Like everybody knows, the custom is in Perpignan to follow the non-Jewish law here. You know, you could see something like here in America, you know, according to halacha, the only male children inherit. Right. You could see somebody forgot to write a halachic will, and, you know, the sons say, oh, we get everything, because according to the Torah, only male children inherit. Right? Ben, you with us? So what would you do in that case? Would you award it to the sons? Or you'd say, no, everybody knows the custom is that generally the children in New York split the assets evenly.
I mean, what strikes me as different in this case, in theory, is that there's an extra transaction in mind, right? Like, there's one question, like, did, you know, can a person make its time in the Yerusha when, like, he never did anything actively at all with regard to the execution of his will. He just died. You know, that's not significant. Here we can talk about the das of the father of the bride and giving the nedunah, which might be an area to introduce minha, where I think applicable in the standard case of Grusha.
Yeah, notice the father's argument here. Vahare kol hanose isha sham ki'ilu hisna came. Right? Anybody who gets married in Perpignan, it's implicit that it's as if he made this explicit condition.
How are we viewing the dunya as the dunya like a matana or the dunya like a nigh?
Yeah, it's kind of a no. It's a matana.
Not like it's nigh condition of source.
No.
Like I'm only marrying you because you can be dunya. It's not like part of like a
right. No, I don't think so. It's very interesting, right?
Even though it's like a, even though dowries are inherently tied to like the actual marriage, like I would.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it's not a condition of the marriage. It's something that goes along with it. It's a gift that accompanies the marriage.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting question, right? I mean, do you go basar minhag, or do you follow the rules of halacha? Now, here I want to point out, we've been talking about these two different ways to think about the significance of minhag hamedina. One is that it encroaches on the party's das; it frames what das the parties reasonably had. The other is that it's dispositive in its own right, right? So I want to point out that there's an important difference between these two views in terms of the domain of relationships that will be governed by Minhag HaMedina. The more you think it's just about Das, then it sounds like you should limit Minhag HaMedina, you should limit Minhag HaMedina to only those relationships that are governed by mutual Das agreements between the parties. Specifically, like contracts and agreements. Because then you can say, oh, their Das was framed by the Minhag. You see that? Whereas, if you think that Minhag HaMalchum is dispositive in its own right, it's just a rule that the halacha incorporates, it could want to incorporate these rules for all sorts of reasons, right? Maybe it's just too complicated for the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Medrash to always keep up with all these rapidly changing practices. You just incorporate it through Minhag HaMedina. Maybe the halacha is...
You think that now is arguing the reverse. You can't keep up with the rapidly changing Minhag, so let's just follow the rules of the Shulchan Aruch.
No, but the point is that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't have something to say about all these like kind of new things.
Oh, okay. That's right. I thought you meant like new developments in commercial practices and not new developments in economies.
Right.
But
also that sometimes, you know, the halacha is indifferent. You know, which side of the street you should drive on. The halacha has no real contribution. So just follow the minhag. Like, whatever the minhag is, that's what the halacha is going to recognize.
But if halacha does have something to say, like in the case of Jerusha,
yeah.
So then wouldn't you say then that halacha, maybe. Anything, like, might not
maybe.
Might not always allow minhag to trump it.
That's a possibility. But, so my point here, though, is to now think about something. So in contracts, it sounds like there won't be a big difference between the two views, right? Because that's governed by Das relationships anyway. So whether or not the norms are dispositive in their own right or whether they encroach on the party's Das, either way, you see how they can make their way into contractual terms and contractual relationships. But when you're dealing with something that's not DOS-related, so just take something like the rules of Nezikin in general. Right? You get into an accident on the road, there's no prior agreement between the parties, so which rules of Nezikin should kick in? So you might think, if Minhag HaMedina is limited to DOS, then you can't incorporate the Nezikin Minhag into Halacha. Only if you think the norms are dispositive in their own right, we incorporate the social practices and conventions, then you might say, even when there's no das, well, we still will be willing to incorporate Dinei Nezikim from what's considered customary in society.
Unless you're from a social perspective.
Just one second, Cole.
Unless you're from a social
yeah, like an implied social contract idea. There's das, like, to all the rules or something like that.
Yeah.
That's like a way of trying to extend it through the das idea.
If you really wanted to...
Yeah, correct. Now, our case is very interesting because we have a Tshuva Sarashpa here where it's a Yerusha case, right, by Yerusha Sabal going up against some non-Jewish minhag or a minhag that originated from like a non-Jewish society but was accepted and taken up by the Jewish community in Perpignan. And notice the way the Toein, the way the father frames his point, Kivan Shakol Yodim Shem Holcha Medina Agayim Ba'are Kol Anose Isha Sham Ki Ilu Hisna Kain. So you see, he wants to shoehorn the Minhag HaMedina of Yerusha in through an implicit Das agreement of the Kedusha. Right? Because this is the background norm, Harikol Anoze Isha Sham Kilu Hisnakein. That's the move in the Tshuva Sarashpa. So here it's being done through Das, at least. Cole, you had a comment?
Yeah, I find the Das reading of Minhag HaMedina to be kind of fragmentation implausible, but it clearly has a lot of support in the Rishonim. I was wondering if you could wax a little lyrical about if it's not, then it's fine. I think you maybe say words about how, if it's not that, where the kind of the normativity of it comes from.
Sure. So Cole's asking, look, if it's Das, we understand the halacha defers to the agreements of the parties, and then the agreement just incorporates the practice, right? But if it's not das, then why should halacha treat mina kamedina as normative? Is that the question?
Yeah, thank you.
So this is what I was trying to say before. To motivate the idea, you might say, well, things like the halacha is indifferent to lots of commercial practices that go on. Like, it just has nothing to say about it. So it has nothing to say about which side of the road people should drive on. And so the most sensible thing to do is just to incorporate, you know, the practice that's going on in society around you.
It's hard to argue that halacha is indifferent when it legislates these areas. It legislates Kinyan, right? Halacha is not indifferent to Kinyan.
Yeah. So that's one way of motivating. Another way... A stronger way of motivating.
Like, how long you work out early in the mornings or later at night. Like, that case, halacha does have a statement. Like,
yeah, and still the norms override it, right? So I think a stronger thing you can say is that it seems... People practice their business under certain social assumptions, right? Within a certain environment. And it's just too cumbersome to subject people to conflicting laws and conflicting rules. How are you supposed to order your economic affairs? Right? So it's like a conflict of laws issue. So in society, business is done one way. Halacha has a different way of telling you to go about doing business. And it's just almost impossible for them to coexist. So one way has to prevail, right? I mean, so what's the rule if you hire somebody? When do they have to show up to work? So the halacha has a certain default. That's what we'll see in the next parak. But then society has a certain default. And the halacha is just saying, like, there's no special halachic interest in keeping you to the halachic defaults. Right? So... another way you might put it is that maybe some of the dinim and choshen mishpat are there just to create default rules, but the halacha is totally happy for those default rules to be changed. And then why should the halacha defer to the minhag ha-medina? Well, simply because it's just more efficient. Maybe it's an economic consideration. It's more efficient for people to be bound by one set of rules. And if the rules they're to be bound to were the halachic ones, then they'd be out of sync with how other people in society are doing business. So there's like an economic coordination point here.
Do you assume in that...
So there's a more internalist meaning of
Yeah.
And that kind of result, there's a different way, which is, it is all better suggested irrational from common practice. It's the halakha suggested irrationality, which is why it incorporates it to allow you to
Cole, you're like dropping out at every other word, so just maybe just say it very clearly so we could hear you.
It is the halakha recognizes that it's subjectively irrational to deviate from common practice.
Okay, so why is it subjectively irrational to deviate from common practice? Because then you're out of sync with it. You're out of sync. You can't do business if you're out of sync with business practices.
Yeah, that's right. It's not so, but it might not be in order to achieve the desired result of streamlining. It might be to protect people's interests in the subjective rationality of doing things in accordance with common practice.
Yeah. And that's kind of like a concession to like a lay person who just goes along with common business practices, right?
Yeah. Like, ceteris paribus, you ought to choose common practice. It's that the halakha recognizes when it's But that, you know, what I was saying earlier was that would allow you to keep some of the da element in the svara, but you sign it, you're sort of so non-opposite. You don't say, you know, in this particular case, the guy has da.
Okay, so I would say that das is being used here in two different senses. When I'm using das, I mean like, oh, this is like what the parties agreed to, and so the halacha.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean das like in the sense of like the terms of their agreement.
No, you mean the states of mind, the mental states of contract of parties.
Yes.
But I'm saying, yeah, I get that. But this would allow you to avoid the kind of just pragmatic.
Yeah. Okay, good. Zolti.
Is there like a value if you could like, you know, be the change you want to see and like change the minha to like more?
Doesn't seem like it. Right, yeah, it doesn't sound like it. I would think not. There's a famous tshuva of Moshe, which I'll add to these sources, about it's like when New York had rent control laws. And so, you know, like these Jewish landlords, halacha is like kind of the opposite, much more laissez-faire when it comes to, like...
We were just in a temporary halacha tshuva for chapter,
but Dina de Malchusa. Okay. Right, so Moshe, it's not a Dina de Malchusa tshuva.
Moshe has lumped a few things in with, like, the formal Dina de
Malchusa. Right. So Moshe actually says, he's like, Dina de Malchusa is complicated. I don't know when Dina de Malchusa really applies and when it doesn't. He says, but when it comes to rent control, even though the halacha would allow you to raise rents as much as you want, he says, certainly the minog hasochrim in New York is that you can't raise rents. Because like the minog is like framed by the laws, and he thought that's going to be... And then Moshe has this long discussion where he says, yeah, all the dinim in Baba Basra, about a mochar es habayis, lo mochar es hachalon, or you know what gets included in a sale. Moshe says, these are just like default rules that are going to be overridden by Minhag Medina. So like, you could buy a house in New York and then say, oh, the Gemara says that, you know, Mochar Es Habayis, Lo Mochar Es HaChatzer. So Moshe says, the Gemara is just telling you, like, this is the default rule that Talacha has, but obviously you concede to the Minhag
Makom.
And I don't think there's, like, a virtue in, like, making it more Choshen Mishpat E. Because...
You don't think there's any virtue at all? Like, if I could make this sale in such a way that...
Not necessarily, not in these kinds of cases. I mean, I would say even that once you're incorporating Minhag Medina, it is as Choshen Mishpati as it needs to be, right? Because that's just one of the rules, is that we incorporate Minhag.
How do you know where the line is, though?
So it's a good question, right? So you have to kind of look at the cases and the precedents. Right? Okay. We'll see this, what the Tshuva Sarashpi here has to say.
Like, every Minhag has at some level, some aspect of like legal theory that like started this, like the reason that like the minhag like, became a certain practice.
Yeah, so not necessarily.
Like, legislation at some point. Okay, rent control.
Rent control, right? Yeah, I think Yair is right. Sometimes it's just historical, right? So
yeah, but sometimes it's also like, but it was like confirmed through legislation. It was, you know, it kind of through legislation or something within the New York City law.
Maybe a mochar es habayis, right, could just be a function. It could be, maybe those rules are somewhat arbitrary, right? You still need rules. You still need a default rule, but it doesn't mean that the default rule is any better. Let me give you an example.
The halacha
allows parties to reach any agreement they want, right? Kol tanai shel mamon kayam.
Right.
So, but is there a value in not making tanai shel mamon? Not necessarily, right?
Good question. I don't know. Why
would it be better, right? Because these are just default rules for like what liability should be absent an agreement to the contrary. And then same thing here, right? So a lot of the dinim are default rules, which are meant to be updated or meant to defer to Minhag Medina when there is a prevalent minhag. Right? That's kind of interesting to hear.
There's an interesting parallel, I saw in a course I took last semester. There's an interesting parallel between the dinim in Baba Basra and the laws of Hammurabi or other ancient legal codes. And I'm just like, yeah, like renting out houses or selling, you know, property. And like, it looks very much like these are prevalent practices, and so they get codified in the Mishnah. There's nothing inherent about these
possibility, yeah.
So if the dinim of the Mishnah were themselves just minhag at some point, then the argument goes even further, which is, you know, at least a good chunk of it has always been minhag. So of course, minhag overrides it.
That's right.
You have a harder argument with things that are learned from Drusha's Kinyanim or
sure. certain Dinim, like maybe Mokhar Sabayas, whether you're Mokhar Sabchatzer, those are just conventions.
And you know, the Minhag Lem of Ribis doesn't mean as much of Lem of Ribis,
yeah.
even though it's Minhag.
Right, so the question is how much of a deflationary view do you want to go in for in Choshen Mishpat in general?
Right.
Right. To what extent some of these Dinim just, you know, they're practices that are incorporated and then et cetera, et cetera. So it's an interesting background question. All right, Cole, does that help your question a little bit?
Thank you, Ben.
All right. So look here at the, let's let this at the answer of the Rosh. Everybody remember the Rosh? The question here is about the inheritance. Yes, and then we'll get on to our actual, our important discussion today. So the Rosh says, Tshuva, Kol Dovar Shebim Mamon Tino Kayim. Okay, so any Tanai is Kayim. And he says there's a Yushalmi that even speaks of a similar Tanai. That, you know, the Yushalmi talks about a Tanai that people made that if the wife dies without children, then the dowry should go back to the father's house. So we know the Gemara recognizes that if this was made explicitly, this would be a valid Tanai. Okay. And then he says, Umosef ani al zeh. Shebechol mokom shenagu lahasnos velasos kazeh Tanai. If the custom is that everyone in society were to make this kind of condition, afilu hanosim sham stam, even if somebody were to get married there without specifying it, govin mehem imesa belobanim, the right of the father to collect the dowry would still be valid. Shekol hanose stam, aldas hanoeg sham b'Yisrael nose. You know, somebody gets married there without specifying, kind of like what we've been discussing. So you just resolve the ambiguity, or you just interpret it according to Hanohig Sham B'Yisrael. So it's really a remarkable answer that the Rosh was giving. What's he saying? What's his psak? Sounds like he's saying you follow the minog, right? So even though the halacha is that the baal is Yorish Ishto, if the minog in Perpignan really is that the father of the deceased wife gets it back, give it back. Why? So, because of the shoehorn idea. That, kol hanose stam, mistam al das haminag nose. That's his idea. Okay? Now, he is really upset. This kind of gets back to the significance of Choshen Mishpat stuff. Sorry. Here. He says two things. Umikol mokom Linhokin mipneshehu mishpat hagoyim, beemes nir elisha asr lefisha mechaka es hagoyim. He's saying if the minhag came about because the Jewish community wanted to imitate the non-Jewish law, then it's asr to enact or to begin practicing that minhag lechatchila. And that's why the Torah says that lefneihem v'lo lefnei goyim, we have our own set of laws, etc. Right? So he says, therefore, anupo temeim, makom ha-mishpat b'irchem, makom Torah v'yisron das, eich nasnu yad l'chlal dvar me'ilu she'asrasan Torah shleima shalanu. He says, I'm astonished at the Chachamim of Perpignan that you allowed this minhag to come about such that the norm now is that the father gets the nedunya back contrary to Jewish law. So I think the Rosh was upset at the Chachmei Yair for allowing this to take place, but it sounds like he still concedes that the minhag is binding. He's just upset that the minhag came about. See that?
That's right. Back to my question.
Well,
this goes back.
Yeah.
The answer is that it should be.
Well, notice what he says. He says, "Lin ho kein mipnei shehu mishpat goyim," is problematic. It's not the mere fact that the minhag came about in conformity or an outward appearance same as the non-Jewish custom that's problematic. It's the fact that they adopted it because it's the non-Jewish law that's problematic, right? Lino kein mipneshu mishpat agoyim nir elisha aser. So it depends on the reasons behind.
Wait, what else? What do you think the reason was that they saw the non-Jew doing it and they're like, oh, I want to be like the goyim, so I'm going to do it?
Yeah, we like their rule better than the Torah's rule.
You only just like the minhag seeped in.
So if it just became common practice, like some sort of acculturation,
yeah, then, it's not because, but it's because it makes you mishpat like, oh, I'm like,
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think Lin Ho Kane to enact it because it's the.
This is also one area where I think it's very hard to naturally. Like, these are halachas of Nidunia, right? Assuming that there wasn't, you know, relatively common intermarriage in. What's the city again? Parpignan?
Parpignan, yeah.
And it wasn't like they were engaging with Goyim and, like, learning it by acculturation and, you know, doing it themselves, even in Jewish marriages. Like, it has to be something that someone chose to start, you know, treating as normal in the community. I think. I don't know if it's, like, a conscious choice or unconscious choice, but, you know, it wasn't like people, you know, fell into the practice.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's really interesting, Chivas Rashba, though, right? You see how he's willing to bring in the minog through this idea of klanose sham stam al das minog. So you get in, even Dina Yerusha could be supplanted. Well,
what's his conclusion?
So, no, his conclusion seems to be that the minog is dispositive. But because of this idea, klanose sham al das minog nose, he's upset that the minog came about, but it sounds like he's willing to, he thinks that's the din.
Yeah, but like what's already happened.
Yeah. 100%. So that's a really important addition to our discussion of Minog, no? Any final thoughts on that? Yeah, final thoughts?
Professor Anshir made it sound like Chalak Halak, that, you know, in Yerusha is more of a, he made this figure between, like, Yerudea issue and Kosh Mishpah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anything with Yerudea issue,
right, it's not
we're never going to adopt common practice.
Right. That's kind of why this Rashba was so interesting also.
Right.
Right.
Do you think Rashba was like an outlier, that the standard sort of way to talk about
hard
it
to
is?
Hard to say.
Okay. So
this is only Yerusha. Right. I wonder, you know, presumably Rashba wouldn't say this if it was a straight Yerusha case.
Yeah. All right, that's what I wanted to say for the Minhag HaMedina thing. I'll add that tshuva for Moshe later, but this is really what I wanted to cover for now.